You are listening to Journeys on Revolution Radio on freedomslips.com and simulcast with wolfspiritradio.com. Join JP, your tour guide today, on this journey of discovery from the known to the unknown in search of enlightenment, knowledge, and truth.
August, yes, so just lost that one. Anyway, so August 18th, 2014, this is Journeys with JP here on Revolution Radio, 100% organic, homegrown, and free range of revolutionary news from the front lines of where it's happening, what's happening, and who's happening it with. Tonight, my esteemed guest, I'm not going to waste any time because, you know, we all love him. I just want to hear what you have to say, Stuart, because you've got so much. Stuart Swerdlow, cut the crap. Hey, how are you doing, mate?
Fine. How are you doing? It's been a while.
Well, yeah, it's been a while. Before I was just a host. Now I'm an executive producer and I've got people to, I have to, you know, farm jobs out and ask people to do things for me because I can't do them all. So the that makes a change. Yeah, I used to do everything on my own, and it's like, oh, suddenly I'm a team.
It's good to be king, isn't it?
Yeah, it's all services. Yeah. Anyway, so sometimes it's like people are really nice to me, and I'm thinking, why are they nice to me? Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, I understand. Yeah. Right. So, but Stuart, it's lovely to have you here. I know that you're always traveling. I see your posts on Facebook. I follow what's going on for you and often listen to you on other shows, you know. So I know you're always traveling around and you're about to come over to Europe. But where have you been since I last saw you? I mean, what have you... Because you always go places and then learn amazing stuff and come back. So what have you learned?
The good part is coming back.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of trouble in the world. Have you had to kind of work your way through some troublesome zones?
I think maybe I caused some of the trouble. I'm not sure about
that. Yeah, right. Yeah.
But, no, I mean, fortunately, for the most part, it's been okay. And I've been, oh, gosh, so many places since the last time I spoke with you. It's been a couple of years, hasn't it?
Really? Oh, I'm going to have to check. It's probably maybe last year, I think. But it's you know, we go back, you know. So and certainly with Journeys, you know, I'm holding Rebecca's flag till she's feeling a lot better. She's convalescing now, but she was she's been ill for a few weeks, and so things are improving, taking off the pressures and things like that. So yeah, so it is good to have you back. And so where have you been? What have you
seen? Wow.
Where have you been?
Not sure where to start with that one. Gosh, I've been just about everywhere in the last year or so. I suppose I can start with Bosnia. That was a good one.
You met Osmanagic?
Because we had
him on the show for a while, didn't we?
Yeah, he's a great guy, very intelligent, amazing, amazing site there in Visoko in Bosnia. We went into the tunnel systems underneath the pyramids. We climbed to the top of the pyramids. We went all over Bosnia. And we actually did a complete tour of the Balkans, including Croatia, Slovenia, Serbia, even Kosovo, Macedonia, and Albania, and Montenegro. I'm not sure if I'm leaving any one of them out, but then we went into Bosnia from there. So it was quite a trip on that one.
Wow.
And, Yeah, and we met a guide who works for Dr. Osmanagic in the tunnels, who even told us, actually quite secretly, but now making it public, that they, when they uncovered one of the tunnels, towards the ceiling of one of the closed-up tunnels, they found a large winged reptilian and a baby reptilian.
Oh, and, live.
Yeah, and when and apparently it was in some kind of suspended animation, and then when they broke into the tunnel, what he called the mother reptilian passed away, unfortunately, but he said that the baby one flew out of the tunnel and flew away.
Oh my God, a little baby dragon.
Yeah, so somewhere in Bosnia, there's a winged dragon flying around.
Oh, looking for its mate.
Or something.
Yeah, or something. Wow, that's a story. That is a story. So I have a personal friend, actually, who he runs one of the local Indian restaurant, and he went over to help Dr. Osmanagic to do some excavation. And what he was saying is that the underneath the Bosnian pyramid, there is a network of tunnels that are filled with water.
Yeah,
that is
right.
Like a root system, like a... it's like an electricity transmission system. So, have you got any info on that?
Yeah, in fact, we did go to parts of the tunnel that still had water in it. And there were these huge slabs that kind of were like giant silicon chips. And whenever they would move one of these, the tunnels would flood. When they put the slab back to its original position, the water would recede. So it was some kind of a transmission device. There are also energetics in the tunnel, which help to rejuvenate the body, heal all kinds of illnesses and diseases. In fact, people who camp out on the very top of the large pyramid, after a couple of days, a lot of them, some of them are crippled and they walk down all on their own. So it's quite a unique place. He came here to visit us, Dr. Osmanagic, and showed us or let us listen to tapes that were made by the Russian Science Academy that visited there. And they actually found a signal that was being transmitted from somewhere deep inside of the pyramid. And when you play it at a certain speed, it sounds like music. And when you slow it down, it actually sounds like a voice.
Wow.
So it's quite fascinating.
Wow. Well, we were just talking about the wow signal a half hour ago on the Sean David Morton show just now. I don't know if you know, Stuart, but I'm totally fascinated by pyramids and crystals and magnets and stuff. you know, EM radiation frequencies and anyway, so I heard that there was like a 20 now I might have the frequency band wrong. Is it a 27 kilohertz or a 27 megahertz signal that is coming off the top of the pyramid, of the Bosnian pyramid, and actually gets stronger the further up you go?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. He also had a slab with, hieroglyphics and some kind of language written on it. And when they deciphered some of it, they couldn't decipher all of it. It actually said that this was a vortex that was being closed until help could arrive because they were under attack. And as you may know, the tunnels were sealed many thousands of years ago from the inside. So it's not like someone sealed them up on the outside, but someone or something sealed them up from within and then went to inside deeper. And we believe that the way the tunnels are situated, the angles and the size, that it is very likely that the ones who created the tunnel system and maybe the pyramids were not human.
Well, that then takes us to Crimea.
Oh, yeah.
And a series of 17 or 18 pyramids. How close did you get? How close have you been to this one, Stuart? Because I know, I mean, this is right up your street.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of things right up my something, but
not up your street. Right?
But yeah, Crimea. I have been to Ukraine and that part of Russia, actually, Sochi area where the Olympics were. The Black Sea area, and Crimea is right on the Black Sea, is a very mysterious location. There are strange underwater beings that are seen swimming there. There are objects under the water there. There's even believed to be a city, an ancient city that's under the bottom of the Black Sea. And it's quite energetic to go there. You also have to realize that there's a lot of things that connect in Eastern Europe, especially not only Bosnia, but they have found a Sphinx and a pyramid in Romania. There supposedly is a pyramid in Serbia, which of course the Serbian said is even bigger. And there are a lot of pyramids in the region, the Caucasus region of Russia. So apparently, this entire Eastern Mediterranean, Western Asian location was at some point in very ancient history a center of a huge and tremendously technological civilization that probably predated Egypt and maybe was concurrent with Atlantis. Because, you know, Osmanagic has had the stones of the pyramid dated. Some of them are over 40,000 years old. So they're quite ancient.
40,000 years, that's a good number, yes. Isn't it? That's well defined. Yeah, go on.
The concrete that they used to build it is of such a density that even now we do not have the technology to recreate that.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. I have another dear friend. I've got some really interesting football friends. He uses concrete spraying machines and technologies like that. That's what they use to line mines with. When they make a mine, they spray concrete around the outside. So he's into aggregates, like you've known. He's always into talking about aggregates and crystallization. And basically, you make this stuff, this hyperdense stuff, by throwing at high speed and high pressure. You basically spray it.
Yeah.
And it creates a very, very dense and strong shell because it basically crystallizes straight away. Awesome stuff. So more than 40,000 years ago, Stuart.
Yes, yes. And there is supposedly underneath the entire region a very deep freshwater lake which might act as an amplifier because water does amplify electromagnetic energy. It amplifies the entire region. And, of course, the tunnels go on for hundreds, if not thousands, of kilometers. So nobody really knows where they end up or where exactly they connect to.
Right. And these are tunnels that are reminiscent of the military underground bases that we see in, like, Stargate and things like that, aren't they?
Yeah, well, they look a little bit more primitive. However, going back to that spray that you mentioned with the cement walls for the tunnels, in the U.S., they have uncovered tunnels very similar to that, but they glow green, and they have this luminescence that seems to just come out of the wall itself. It's not electrical.
It must be algae. Hey, wouldn't that be cool? You could spray on a wall that would light up.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. It would light up when a person walked near it.
It's some kind of luminescent bacteria that is self-sustaining and apparently immortal.
Awesome. I could do some of that. Some of that in my DNA.
Yeah. So we were there and we learned a lot there. They did uncover artifacts, which really aren't publicized too much because they're still studying them. Very ancient, appears to be, pottery and tools and that kind of thing. But if I can, speaking of tunnels, I also went further north to the area of Svalbard or Spitsbergen near the North Pole. And that was quite an adventure as well. You can only get there from flying from Oslo directly to Longyearbyen, which is the capital of Spitsbergen. And that area is fascinating. There are a lot of tunnels underneath there. And I went to see that place that Prince Charles was helped to build, actually, where all the seed vault, where he kept all the seeds and the DNA of all the species of the earth. Now, when you go up to the place, it's not much wider than a normal garage in your home. So it was a little disappointing to see, you know, I was expecting this massive thing. But then we were told that if you go through the door, which you're not allowed to go through the door, you go into this long tunnel that goes underneath the mountain, and then the complex opens up, and it is heavily guarded, and nobody can get in there. And so that was very fascinating to me. And apparently there are a lot of scientific outposts dotted around Svalbard, which, again, not allowed to go up to them. But only very few countries are allowed to have any access to any of those locations. So it was quite fascinating. And by the way, you know, I went there in July, and there is no global warming because it was snow still on the ground. It was cold. North Pole is frozen. So it's very interesting to me when I hear all these reports on weather stations and internet locations. They say, oh, the caps are melting and there's open water. There is not. It's frozen solid. And I went from there to Greenland and Iceland and to the northern part of Canada. It's frozen solid. There's no open water.
So, as we've all been suspecting for a while that global warming, stroke climate change, stroke, oh, what the heck's going on? We still want to charge you for it. Stroke carbon tax is a complete scam by the Fed and their cohorts. So energetically, Stuart, I know you're perceptive on many frequency bands, more than the average bear, eh? What do you notice? I mean, you travel the world. Do you notice things like the state of the energetic grid in the country, by the state of the happiness of the people and things like that?
Well, I do notice the energy of each location. And yes, there are some places which are more, let's say, heavier energy, some which are more scattered. But I basically feel, and I've mentioned this on my website and in my lectures, that the Earth is the natural state of the Earth is an ice age. I mean, that is just normal for the Earth. We've already been in the warm period where the ice age and the glaciers have retreated. Now we're entering a time period when this is returning. And that usually happens every 10 to 15,000 years. And it's been about 12,000 years since the last major ice age. We've had many ones here and there since then, but I see a new one coming. And recently I found information that you can find on the internet that we are supposed to be right now in a solar maximum, which means a lot of sunspots. But this is the lowest solar maximum ever recorded since they've been looking at these things. There's hardly any sunspots at all. And whenever that happens, that's when an ice age occurs. And the North Pole ice sheet has increased by 60% in 1 year. The South Pole, Antarctica, has record high ice and snow levels and the coldest recorded temperatures since they've been keeping records. You know, whatever they're telling you, whatever Al Gore is saying on the news is just a bunch of rubbish, because quite the opposite is true.
So, this takes us to my other theory, and I'm not sure if you share it, but you perhaps do, is that the Earth is expanding, and that there is kind of the rifts in the ocean are the places where the new material is pushing apart, but essentially the whole Earth is expanding all the time, and things like subduction zones only happen because because of the curvature of the hard plate on top. Anyway, look. But my other weird theory is that the ocean water comes from comets. and meteors and the remnants of comets as we pass through them, like we are now. We've had enormous amounts of water here. It's been flooding, and I was thinking, where is all this water coming from? Is it coming from space? Could it come from space? And then I thought, well, Maldek was a water planet. It's what makes comets. Comets are dirty snowballs. What's a dirty snowball made of? Water. Could this be where all the cloud is coming from?
Well, I'll tell you something. In my Blue Blood book, I wrote about the condition of the Earth before it looked like this, eons of time ago. And the Earth was a water planet. It was almost totally covered in water. Plus, there's water on the inside of the Earth as well. And it was only when an ice comet passed by that stripped Mars of its atmosphere and took actually a third of the surface of the Northern Hemisphere off of Mars, and then went into rotation around the Earth and polarized the water and created the polar ice caps. Then that ice comet pushed the Earth out into a new position, and the ice comet took the position of the second planet of the Sun, and that, of course, the ice comet was Venus. So, making a very long story short, or making a comment, the water has been here because the Earth was a water planet. Yes, it's true that when an ice comet does hit the Earth, it does bring water with it. Yes, absolutely. However, it doesn't bring so much to create extra, oceans or anything like that. It's not significant of an amount of water. As far as the Earth expanding, well, we see this happening right now in the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, which extends actually from Svalbard down through Iceland, through the middle of the Atlantic, North Atlantic, and South Atlantic Ocean, and then goes down towards Antarctica. In the northern part, in the North Atlantic, the Mid-Atlantic Ridge is pulling apart so that it's putting pressure on the eastern part towards Europe and putting pressure on the western part towards the North American continent and the Caribbean. And correct, as that happens, magma comes to the surface, starts to solidify, and yes, it does push the Earth a little bit wider. But we must remember that there is a limited amount of magma underneath between the inner and outer crusts of the Earth. And this is what is slowly pushing its way to the surface, so that at some point in the future, and it may be very far into the future, the magma will dissipate. It will all come to the surface. The inner crust and the outer crust will then meet, and then there should not be, after that, any more seismic or volcanic activity. But that's way into the future.
So that's like when the whole thing crystallizes or dries out like a seed pod.
Yes, that's very much a good way of looking at it.
Well, I have a kind of... I mean, everything is natural, isn't it? Nature is natural. Solar systems are nature, so they're natural. They must behave like other natural things. And I'm always looking for how is that? What is that? What does it look like? How does it behave? And how does it reflect in nature, which is always fractal? So if you see it in your backyard, it's going to happen in the world, it's going to happen in the solar system, etc.
Yes, that's correct. As above, so below.
Exactly. So, now, we don't have a commercial break till the top of the hour, so it's a real time you can expand yourself and, obviously. So, expansions. Your website is called expansions.com, so... Tell us what's going on the site. Let's let the audience know is that I first helped you do some audio shows, and we did a small series of those, and you published those on your site, and then you went over to actually recording yourselves on video, you and Janet. Just having it's like a kind of morning show almost, and it's amusing, and very entertaining and informative. So how have you been doing with those?
Ah, yeah, our podcast, which we do every week. In addition, Janet also does a cooking show, which is all on our site and on YouTube. You can go to the YouTube channel. But yeah, we have a lot of things going on here at Expansions. And you know, JP, it's really been the last year or two a roller coaster ride with all the things that have been going on, as you can well imagine. You know, there's been sabotage, there's been all kinds of things going on. So we're finally getting ourselves in good shape now, in good order. And so if I may, I'll just tell you what's going on chronologically for the rest of the year. And
absolutely. You have the floor, you have the talking stick, you have the feather, and you've got the special little hat.
Oh, well, you know what I'm going to do with the feather, but we won't discuss that on the air. But now, we'll talk about September, just a couple of weeks away. I will be in Iceland again, doing seminars in Akureyri and Reykjavik, as well as consultations there. And then I will go on to Poland, to Wrocław, Poland, which is in the southwestern part of the country. And I will do a TV show there, a seminar, and consultations. Then October, now this is very amazing in October. It's going to be our, I believe, our 13th annual conference here in St. Joseph. The title is Everything Oversoul and the Alien Agenda. And I'm very excited about that because I will be discussing the entire alien agenda from top to bottom with new information, which I have received in the last few months, some of which has been buried for decades. In fact, a lot of it has been, plus what I've learned in various trips that I've gone to around the world. So you don't want to miss that. To come to our conference, it's the October 10, 11, and 12. We also have, by the way, a newsletter, an email newsletter you can sign up for on the site. We have, as you mentioned, a Facebook fan page that you can go and click that you like it. And very important, in January 2015, every year in January, we do a hyperspace oversoul extravaganza. And that's, I believe, 7 days long. That's quite an intense week. And you can contact Patricia at customer support at expansions.com for information. And I always tell people who come in January, you better bring boots and you better bring a shovel because there's no global warming here. I'll tell you right now. In fact, last winter we had, I guess it was over 6 meters of snow, here, and temperatures down to minus 45. And this year they say it's going to be colder. So
I heard that in Michigan there were a whole bunch of brass monkeys lining up at the welding center.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, some of the leaves have changed already and the squirrels are already gathering their food for the winter, and we've had really no crops to speak of. It's been such a cold summer and so stormy, and that's one of the things that happened here in Michigan. Is in July we had horrible storms, something called a derecho, which I don't know if you know about over in the UK, but a derecho is a very powerful storm with high winds, tornadoes, heavy rain, incessant lightning. There will be damage. There's no question. And yes, we did have a lot of damage and we're still cleaning up from that. So it's been quite, a summer, if I may say so. It's been quite,
yeah. I think we have a similar kind of, we've had a similar winter and summer, as you're talking about. All the insects are confused. There aren't many, pollinating. I've got beans growing. They're just growing. No beans. No insects. No pollination. We've had not very many bees. Actually, not very much has grown. Like potatoes are good. I have to say potatoes are good because they're a root thing. So if you want to invest in any vegetable, potatoes and kale, and you've got to get the bloody caterpillars off. I got a whole box of these yellow caterpillars. Yeah, picking them off the kale. They make little skeletons.
No, we shall not have that on our kale. But you know, since you talk about the weather again, the Western United States, especially I'm mentioning those listeners who are in California, Oregon, Washington, etc. They have, as you have heard on the news, there is a severe drought, probably unprecedented, in recent history. In fact, the water tables are so low that they can hardly water the crops anymore. But here's the thing, and I just read a report this morning about that, that because the water tables are so low and the ground is so dry, it's causing a deformation in the substrata that is connected to the fault lines. And so it is believed that at some point, because of this drought, the fault lines will slip, and there may be very major quakes all along the western coast of the United States.
Well, that's, of course, the pressure that is exerted by the expanding planet. So there'd be parts of the plate would be cracked and squeezing together on the surface.
Correct. That's correct.
So yeah. So the water is just a. Right. Okay. So we're talking about the kind of the geology of a planet, right? Mm-hmm. That, by all intents and purposes, I believe, has been out cold, knocked out, a long time ago, several thousand years ago. And the planet is just kind of coming round from a coma, planetarily.
that's interesting.
Has been traumatized and is in process of dealing with an infection. Of a very small amount of creatures, but they're able to produce an awful lot of toxic material. So, as a planetary doctor, what would you say would be the prognosis and diagnosis and treatment, sir?
Well, you know, when a living being wakes up and finds stuff crawling all over it and polluting it, it shakes it off, doesn't it?
Totally.
Yes, so we can consider that Mother Earth, as you say, waking up from a coma, so to speak, and seeing what's crawling all over it, it's going to react, of course. And I feel that that is also what the Ice Age is about. Because listen, when you have a rash and bumps on you, you put ice on it and cool it off. So that's kind of what's happening. And, I know that snow and ice have appeared in places that's never been seen before. For example, we reported a few weeks ago on our podcast that snow actually fell in Vietnam and Laos and the Philippines, and they don't even know what snow is.
And Egypt as well.
And
Sphinx with snow on it. Awesome.
Yes. Yes, absolutely, and there's been snow all in South America. In fact, in southern Brazil, they actually had snow a few months ago. So, you know, when I hear this global warming thing, I used to laugh at it, but now it kind of is annoying, because all you got to do is look out the window and you see there is no global warming anywhere. And quite honestly, we are seeing also a very slow hurricane season. There's hardly any activity in the Atlantic. It was a very low tornado season here in the United States, and that's because all of these storms need a clash of cold and warm air to agitate the atmosphere in order to create the storms. So when there is no clash of these air masses, then there's not going to be storms. And I really go back to a couple of years ago with that BP oil devastation in the Gulf of Mexico, because that whole situation stopped the Gulf Stream that flowed around the southern United States into the North Atlantic and towards Europe. And so that basically kept warm water flowing towards the surface of the ocean. And now that the Gulf Stream is pretty much dead, there is cold water upwelling from the depths of the ocean and taking over from where the warm water was. So that's why we are seeing colder winters, and that's why we are seeing less severe storms in the ocean area. However, I want to go back to what you said about the Earth opening and spreading and growing a bit, because you may have read almost every day in the news there's something about shark attacks or shark sightings or sharks coming so close to the coastlines. And that's because there's so much undersea activity, quakes and volcano eruptions, that the sharks are scared to go into the depths of the ocean, so they come closer to the shore, because all the marine life is moving away from those activities. And so they're going to where the food is and where the safety is. So these are signs that people should watch when they see these things happen, because it's symbolic of what's going on where you can't see it. And people also should realize that most of the volcanic activity of the Earth is not recorded, because it is in the very depths of the ocean where there are no recording devices. So we need to be aware of that as well.
So it's still a lack of ability to have the senses that we don't know about it. Could that be I think earthquakes have been increasing in frequency exponentially, it appears, but that doesn't relate to the ability to sense earthquakes, does it? Because we've had the sensitive enough equipment for years.
Correct.
So something is shifting, the crust is shifting. She is waking up and going, what the heck is this? So one other thing I wanted to go back to, the pyramid idea, is you were saying that there was a trigger that allowed the tunnels underneath to be flooded or not. Flooded or drained.
Yeah.
So, to me, that's a regulation device that can switch the transmission. It's like, because the water tunnels act as aerials. They're like capillaries of they're like aerials. They're like antenna, and they will radiate the 27 megahertz that is being produced in something now. Is there an equivalent King's Chamber position inside there, and is there an arc generator inside there, fully equipped with the whole Ark of the Covenant business, as I believe there is?
In
any of these pyramids that they're discovering, but particularly in Boston.
Yes. Yeah, there is a central chamber which they have identified with sonic equipment. However, it's so deep within this huge pyramid that they cannot get to it yet. However, my theory that I've written about, both with the pyramid in Giza and Bosnia and other, perfect pyramids, my theory was that what you see above is a reflection of what's underneath. So in effect, it's not exactly a four-sided pyramid, but really it's an octahedron if you take the same shape underground and connect it base to base. And so I discussed this with Dr. Osmanagic, and he said, yes, he agrees that these are actually octahedrons. And as you may recall, and some of the listeners may recall, the octahedron shape is also referred to as a Delta T antenna, which was used at the Montauk Project from 1970 to 1983. And so it is actually an interdimensional device. And so these pyramids are not only energy generators, but they're also interdimensional devices which can be used for travel to anywhere in time and space. And the water is an amplifier. Even the pyramid at Giza, they discovered a couple of years ago these copper chambers that ran along the sides of them, and nobody knew what they were for. But underneath the Giza plateau is the stream that comes off from the Nile River. And so there's water there, and the ancients used to pull that water up through that copper tubing and energize the octahedron so that it would produce energy and can be used for interdimensional purposes. So there's a lot more to these things than we realize right now.
Oh, totally, totally. So the octahedron takes us round to one of my favorite things, which is this beautiful protection algorithm you use.
Oh, yeah.
Could you, I mean, it's one something that I've what does it do? How does it work? And how do people do it?
Ah.
Yeah. Grilling time now.
Let's see. It's, first of all, I call it the ultimate protection technique. And what it is a tetrahedron, which is a three-sided pyramid, inside the middle of an octahedron. And we visualize that around us. So in other words, we are in the center of the tetrahedron, which is in the center of the octahedron, and we put the whole thing in violet, and violet is a filtering and protection energy. And so if you put yourself or any person, place, or thing that you wish to protect, it will remain protected and intact. You can test it around your home, your car, your own person, and it will keep you protected and filtered from any ELF or microwave that's coming your way. Now, this I call ultimate protection because if we go back to the ancient Bible code, I'm sure you've heard about that and read about that, where the first five books of the Old Testament can be fed directly into a computer. And then there are skip sequences. In other words, there are certain periodic letters that match and form symbols or shapes. And every chapter in the Old Testament forms a shape. And if you ask the computer to put all of the shapes from all of the codes in the Bible and make one master form out of it, you would get the ultimate protection of the tetrahedron inside the octahedron. And what is even more fascinating is that if you take a light and you shine it at any point through this structure, on the other side will be shapes that come out. So in effect, you will, by this one shape, be able to create every other shape in creation. So that's why I call it ultimate protection.
Awesome, because I love the tetrahedron. I have I have one hanging in my bedroom that I made about 20 years ago, and it's a bronze rod form of four tetrahedrons kind of stuck together to make a big one. It's like the beginning of that thing that Nassim has, you know, but it's just like one tetrahedron, like four sticking out of the middles of it. Awesome thing, and every day, you know, I just, to do meditation, I just look at this thing because it turns into, every day is a different form as it spins, because it's hanging and it can spin freely. And it spins into new forms. Some days it's a skewed, what's that, a parallelogram. Sometimes it's a trapezoid. You know, it just does these amazing things as you look at it, as it spins.
That's the basis of creation, basically.
Exactly. So we see these forms and they project themselves out, and they are their own life and they're projecting through us, aren't they?
That's correct. We are those forms. They are within our own mind pattern, and we can project them out at will and use them to create what I call hyperspace sentences to accomplish whatever it is that you wish to have in life.
So this is indeed correct spelling.
Yes, of course.
Collects. I keep telling my girlfriend, and she's probably really annoyed by it, but I keep saying correct spelling is imperative.
Well, you know, these days, there is no correct spelling anymore with the way they text and have those little slang words for other things. In a few years, people won't know how to spell or write anymore.
Well, this is the thing, because when I'm talking about spelling, I'm also talking about the performance of magic spells, i.e. speaking correctly. Because when you speak correctly, when you express the right vibration, you do become creative, as you're saying.
Correct.
So that's what I mean. I'm being slightly facetious. Correct spelling is, you know, being able to focus your mind and your body and express the same thing in integrity and with purity and power as you express it.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, even spelling words is important, because words have an energy, and the spelling of the word has a frequency. And when you verbalize or even think it, it does have an effect on your energy field and your DNA. So it's very important that in spelling the word, you also are correct in your spelling the way you mentioned it.
Indeed. Correct spelling is imperative. So I drive myself mad. I think I've driven myself mad.
Well, you don't have far to go, Jake.
Not far to go, that's right. Actually, I could walk there. Nobody needs to drive me there. I could walk. So, we've got a question, actually. Let's deal with it. And because, again, it's right up my street, and it's about frequencies. And actually, it's a thought, Peter, that I've had. This is Peter from somewhere in the West, I think, Arizona. All right. He says, do you believe that there's anything significant about the second as a unit of time, specifically related to frequency, as in hertz? Are there different specific frequency bases, I think you mean, that you believe relate to the chakra system or any other beneficial spirit body energetic system?
I'm trying to understand what that question is.
I think he's talking about, and this is something I thought, right, we measure frequency in terms of hertz, which is cycles per second.
Right.
And a second is, you know.
Right.
But most
right.
people, it's kind of arbitrary. You know, people say count, you know, give me a count of 5 seconds, and it'll be a different value, you know, according to their own internal clock.
Yes.
So I think what Peter's asking is, how arbitrary is the number system that we have? Is there another number system? Are there organic number systems that aren't based, say, for instance, on the it comes back to are there other ways of measuring vibration, Stuart? Yes.
Okay. Now I get it. It took me a bit, but I finally got it.
That's fine. Well, I get his problem, you know, but you see what I mean?
Well, you know, two different things actually here. Because we're talking about time, which is really an illusion of physical reality.
And exactly.
And every planet has a different timing sequence because of its orbit and connection to the sun, etc. So to answer his question, yes, there are different frequencies or sequences of time. However, the numerical system is universal or inter-universal. That doesn't change, but the frequencies can change depending on your location within a universe, if that makes any sense.
So, on other planets, do they have a similar measurement of time? Does it depend on their distance from the sun? And are they divided in the same way? So for instance, do they have hours, minutes, and seconds on, say, Uranus? Or do they have a different way of dealing with reality? And is it possible to kind of get our heads around that?
Well, let me just say this. A highly technological and advanced civilization does not use time in the way it's used here. In fact, they don't use time because they know time doesn't really exist. There is no past, present, and future. There's simply what we can call the eternal now. There's only the moment now, which is exists simultaneously everywhere. So in that respect, no, they don't use the same measurement of time as here because they don't recognize it in the same way. There are planets, you know, what science calls rogue planets, which have no association to a star. They're just free-floating out in deep space. So they have absolutely no measurement of time in the way we would see it. So, yeah, there's many, many different ways of looking at it depending on the origin of the being, the spin of its original home world, the distance from its sun, if it even has a sun, and some of them don't even recognize time as existing.
So what he's asking as well is, okay, so we recognize time in terms of this, you know, our rotations and all of that sort of mathematical divisions and things like that. There are other cycles that we could use as, I mean, that's the question. This is the question. Do the other races use a cycle system of some kind, or what the hell do you do in the eternal now? Is it like just being in the bar, you know, or by the beach, or you know, just forever, like Jim Kirk in the Star Trek when the Nexus came, you know, and he's in this place, and it's always the same day every day. Is it like that? Is that what heaven's like? Is it heaven? Are we talking about? Sorry, I'm just like brrr.
You know, we have to recognize that physical reality is really frozen energy, if you will. And once you get outside of physical reality, there are no cycles as we would conceive of them. In fact, there are frequencies that we cannot even measure in physical reality because we have no concept of them. Human beings can only perceive 0.5% of reality. That means 99.5% of existence is unavailable for human perception. So that should give you a clue to what really is out there compared to what we know or can conceive of.
But would we mess our pants if we saw it all at once?
Well, you wouldn't need pants, would you, JP?
I imagine. You see, what I'm starting to get the idea of is that we're like, I don't know what we're like. You know, we're blindly stumbling through the universe. We're stomping on nature like an enormous giant, plunging our way, tearing our way through the planet like an enormous angry robot. And we wonder why we're getting storms.
Well, you know, I'm going to discuss this in October about the alien agenda, but many of the civilizations out there consider humans to be, they call them shells or just like empty shells. And that's what they consider humans to be. Others consider humans to be like a parasite or not even worth acknowledging. So we're kind of low on the totem pole out there.
We don't impress the neighbors much.
No, in fact, this is a very bad neighborhood.
We're in the South Bronx of the solar system.
That would be an improvement, actually.
oh, hang on. Steve Travis is going to have a go at me now because I said the South Bronx is a, well, you know, traditionally the South, there must be worse places, you know, because Steve comes from the South Bronx, so, you know, he says that, you know, there are worse places because there's, you know, everywhere's, wherever you go, there's a worse place. You know, in Britain they have Birmingham, and in Birmingham they have Wolverhampton, and in Wolverhampton they have Dudley. You know, so there's this kind of pecking order of hierarchy of crap places in the world. Anyway.
I've actually been there.
What, to Dudley?
In Birmingham, yeah, all those places you mentioned.
Yeah, Dudley is the great place. I mean, Birmingham has this this accent that is like they don't make intelligent people sound there. So if they want somebody to play a little bit simple, you know, they give them a Birmingham accent. Anyway, aside from cultural racism, we're probably coming up to the top of the hour. Stick around. We're going to be hearing some more about Stuart Swerdlow's travels during the break. I'm going to play a tune over on Wolf Spirit Radio. If you're listening to Revolution Radio, stick around, listen to the things and buy the seeds and somehow make it to the other side. And when you've done so, we'll be back with Stuart Swerdlow. Where's the music? Come on. Come on, give us the music. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Oh, well. So much for my timing. It's not quite yet. 54.
Well, I could sing if you want.
You could sing. We could sing together. We could sing in harmony.
Yeah. Well, you play music, don't you?
I do. Yeah. In fact, I play the song that I'm about to play on the on Wolf Spirit. I do my own version, and an ex-girlfriend of mine she's just posted on YouTube a performance that we did years ago, me singing and playing it and doing the whole thing. But they're getting the. They're getting the original one.
So, you'll have to send me the link.
Yeah, I'll drop that on there, and we'll see that when. Yes.
Oh, and JP, when we come back,
fill in the time. Yeah.
Yeah, I want to talk about my trip to Japan because that was fascinating.
Wow, Stuart's been through the danger zone. Did you wear a kind of paper bag thing, sort of paper bag suit?
Well, I'm going to tell you, I was actually in Fukushima, and it was perfect. There was nothing wrong.
Did you hear that, brothers and sisters? There's nothing wrong in Fukushima. What's really going on? Find out in the next hour of Journeys with JP here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, Wolf Spirit Radio. Hello. Welcome back to Studio B Revolution Radio. This is Journeys with JP, myself, and tonight my guest, my esteemed guest, and very well loved by our audience and by our team, and a true wanderer of the planet, giving us the big picture as he sees it, Stuart Swerdlow. Welcome back. So you went to Japan and you didn't get your manhood fried or anything? Or did they serve it
that was another story, JP. But, but it was quite interesting because one of the first I went through Tokyo, of course, and then went to first Fukushima. I was really looking forward to sensing what was going on there, to feeling the energy. I tell you what, when you go to Fukushima, it looks like nothing ever happened. The buildings are all intact. The trains are running. It looks like normal. And as far as the energy is concerned, I didn't feel anything wrong. And I usually pick up those things quite easily. And I felt nothing. And in fact, the people I was with are used to monitoring the radiation levels, and it was in the normal range. I think a lot of that has dissipated or unfortunately moved out over the ocean. But the area around Fukushima and northern Japan and even into Tokyo was quite normal, actually, which I was glad to see that. Now, what I really want to talk about is I went north to the town of Shingo in the very northern part of Japan across the water from Hokkaido Island. Now, here in the town of Shingo, there is a tomb which they say is Jesus and his brother. And it was quite interesting. It's in a very remote area, way up in the mountains. And we went up there, and lo and behold, there you are in Japan, and you walk up this mountain, and there on the top is two gigantic crosses, fenced around, picket fence, with a museum. And, they actually have, information, that Jesus came there, and across the walkway is the, tomb of his brother, who they call Isukuri, which is a Japanese, form of Isaac, which I found very interesting. Now, any of those listeners who have read my Blue Blood book or my new True World History book, know that I talked about how Emmanuel left the Holy Land and traveled to Srinagar in what is now the border of Pakistan and India, and that his grandson, also named Emmanuel, traveled across Asia through Siberia and wound up in Japan. And there's information, and I got a lot of detailed information in Japan, where there are Japanese songs, Japanese words, Japanese lettering, which is identical to Hebrew. Now, how did that happen? And what's also interesting is in the museum, which is located right next door to the tombs, it tells an entire story of how there was this convoy that left the Holy Land and traveled across Asia through Siberia, and according to this information, even went to Alaska, and from Alaska was brought by boat to Japan. So it kind of dovetailed very well into the work I had done in my books. So I thought that was an eye-opener for me. It was a confirmation of what I have written about in history. And then, with special permission, I was taken to the home of a family who claims direct descendancy of this Emmanuel. These Japanese people have blue eyes, whiter skin, very Middle Eastern type noses, and yet they've been in Japan for centuries. They are the only family that has direct access to the emperor's palace at any time that they want. And they showed me artifacts that have been in their family for over 1,000 years, for almost 2,000 years. And these artifacts came from the Middle East. So I will tell you that what I saw in Japan completely corroborated everything that I have written about in my historical work.
I'm so pleased for you. That's really good. So literally, you found the Sangreal. You found the Holy Grail.
Well, I'll tell you what.
At least one vein of it. Nobody would have thought. Exactly, very well hidden.
And hardly anyone goes there. But here's the other thing, which is even more fascinating, is every Israeli ambassador to Japan, the first thing they do when they are assigned to Japan is they go right to that location, and right on the ground in front of the tomb is a huge plaque from the Israeli embassy dedicated as friendship between Israel and Japan. Now, if you know the Israelis, you know they don't just do things for no reason. They have very calculated reasons for doing it. And so it makes sense to me that the Israelis know about the connection between Japan and the Middle East. And when you trace, for example, I traced the Sikh people, S-I-K-H, and you know there's a lot of Sikh people in Britain, and a few here. And I looked at their history, their language, their culture, and I traced that also to the Middle East. And I have a very good friend in Britain, in Birmingham, actually, as you mentioned, who is a Sikh, and together we have researched this. And the remarkable thing is much of the Sikh culture, some words in the language, are identical to the ancient Hebrew. So I believe that the Sikh people are descendants of the original colonization of India from Emmanuel and his entourage.
That is quite a... So, like like the tubes that come away from the underside of a pyramid that go out in all directions. So does the tribes, the holy blood and the holy grail, the families of the descendants of these people. So what is it? Where do they come from and who are they?
Ah, now JP, you're getting into real detailed information.
Oh, Stuart, I know. It's just you and me.
Well, I'll tell you what. And I've written about this. This Emmanuel was an alien creation. And in fact, if you have read the book, the document called The Talmud of Emmanuel, which is translated into Swiss German and also into English, it does discuss this. And this document was found encased in resin in a church in Jerusalem during the 1960s by a Palestinian professor. He took that information and fled with it to a Palestinian refugee camp in southern Lebanon, which was promptly bombed. And fortunately, before that happened, he managed to send some of that document to Switzerland, where it was translated into Swiss German. And that's why we have the information today. But the Israelis tried to destroy that information by bombing the Palestinian refugee camp.
Again, so, destroying the true story. That's their quest, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, history is written by the victors. The true history is completely washed over and converted into something else. In fact, I just, in my book, in my true history book, I talked about how the Vikings colonized North America over 500 years before the other Europeans did. And by the way, Christopher Columbus never set foot in North America. That's just, you know, not a true story there. And, just last week on my podcast, I talked about how they uncovered a Viking ship and the banks of the Mississippi River. So, again, more proof that the Vikings were all across North America. In fact, even here in Michigan, very often, ruins are uncovered by farmers who are plowing fields. Viking lodges have been found in the forest. They've been here. That's this we know.
All right, Vikings. Red hair, blue eyes, tall?
Yeah,
because my mom had red hair and blue eyes, and this is where I'm going to, because I know you've got some information about eye color and the kind of where they all come from. Now my eyes are sort of they're dark blue. They're not pale blue. They're dark blue, and I'm quite confused because my dad had brown and my mom had blue eyes, pale blue eyes. what is it? Does that mean I'm really ill, or is something else going on? Is it, you know, what is the thing about the blue eyes, the brown eyes, the whole bit?
Well, as I mentioned in my work, people with lighter hair, lighter color eyes have an enzyme in their genetic structure which enables programming to take hold, where darker skin, darker eye people, the programming is harder to input. And that is why they, especially in World War II, the Germans tried to promote the Aryan race, the blonde hair, blue eyes, not because it was beautiful. Well, they claimed it was beautiful, but the real reason was it was more programmable, and then you can have a population which is easily mind-controlled. And that's what we have as a result these days, is the result of the German work and experimentation and programming. Now, the Americans picked up on that because, as you know, under Project Paperclip, they brought the German scientists to the United States, like Wernher von Braun, for example, who was in charge of NASA. And they took these German scientists into hidden locations, and they developed or continued their experimentation with programming, food additives, mind control, pharmaceuticals, everything you can imagine, genetic manipulation. And ultimately, they were very anxious to control darker-skinned people. And in the beginning, when they felt they weren't able to do that, that's when they started the programs to eliminate darker-skinned people, and that's why Africa is having all these diseases and problems that they're trying to eliminate the black race there. But in North America, because 80% of the black race actually has Caucasian genetics in them because of the slavery time period, they were able to tap into that and start processes of controlling darker-skinned people. And Michael Jackson was the prototype of that. Which is why, if you look at his image over the years, from the first when he became famous as a child until his death, you can see the metamorphosis of Michael Jackson. You couldn't tell what color he was, what gender he was. You know, he was like an alien. He didn't even know what he was.
He said that his father told him that he had a gene that has been switched on. It was a gene that happened sometime in his family that the people would go white, right? So he's referring, he's had his genes altered.
Well,
maybe
yes.
It was his Billy jeans. Oh no, sorry. Sorry, I couldn't help it. Sorry.
don't give up your day job, JP. So don't call us, we'll call you.
So anyway, meanwhile, but yeah, I mean, he was genetically attacked. He was psychotronically attacked, presumably.
Oh, yeah.
And was that robotic walk? Did they actually play him like a puppet?
You know, absolutely.
Physically by electricity, you know, in the joints and things?
Yeah, and that's the symbolism of the glove that he wore, because Michael Jackson was aware of what was being done to him. And that's why he drugged himself. And that's why he tried to bleep out his reality, because he knew he was being used as a puppet and he was being used as a method to control others of his race. And so this was very disturbing to him. And in fact, on the tour he was about to go on before he was killed, he wrote songs about that. And that was completely stopped. And his own sister stated, she said, they killed him. She knows it.
Absolutely. There's this awesome... all right, let's go. Let's go to the dark side. Over to the dark side. So we're going to... Michael Jackson appeared to have funded a series of films made by Farhan Khan. Have you heard of this series?
I have heard of it.
It's awesome. It's beautifully filmed, really cleverly done, and it starts off with Marshall Mathers, is that his name? Eminem. He wakes up from a dream, and he's in the dream. He's like he's at this Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and the guy he calls him off, and you know, say, how you doing? You know, everything fine? Yeah, good. Well, you know, if you want to go have a party, you know, anybody wants to have a party, just go along, you know. But I'll be exposed to, it's fine, you know, enjoy the alcohol. And eventually his voice kind of drops down into like, voice that is so so reminiscent of the Goa Wald and things, that he's dreaming, this is his deal with the devil, that he's made a deal with the devil, and that he expresses as the character Rain Man, and they all talk about the Rain Man, and so it's all about the doing the deal with the devil, which is the same as working with the Illuminati, seems to be.
Yes.
the whole thing. Do you want to put a few words out, because it's how I grew up, Stuart. I was born in 61, and I just saw all this, you know, saw all these things, and now they're all coming to pieces. you know, all the pop stars that I enjoyed when I was a kid in Great Innocence turn out to be perverts and paedophiles and rapists and murderers and really nasty, evil people. And we're fooled into thinking that these people are nice and good and happy and charitable and all of these wonderful qualities, and they're actually worse than we could ever imagine. So, you've seen this. What do you see? How does it work, and how can we deal with all this crap, Stuart?
Well, you know, it's been going on for a very, very long time, and the world is not what it seems. We are completely, the world, the entire population of the world, 7.3 billion people, are mind controlled to one degree or another. Everyone has some kind of mind control and programming. And the leaders, you know, they're not who they claim to be. I mean, look at the U.S., who's in charge of the U.S. And no one knows where he was born. Nobody knows, you know, what his background is. And if you mention anything, you know, that's off with his head. And so, and that's the same in your country, and it's the same in most other major countries. It's all, you know, I remember that song from the 1970s, Tom Jones. Remember that song, The Young New Mexican Puppeteer? You know, and he pulled the strings and people applauded and the puppet, you know, controlled them. That's what that song was about. It was about the Illuminati and everyone being a puppet. And of course, it was a New Mexico puppeteer, because New Mexico was where all the underground bases were located at the time, and the ELF transmissions were being beamed out from there. So, you know, if we go back and look at the music, even from 30, 40 years ago, they're telling you what was going on and what's happening. So yes, and things are, chemicals are put in our food, nanotechnologies that create implants in the body, satellites around the earth that transmit scalar waves, ELF, microwave, your television, your radio, your computer, everything has carrier waves that have mind control and programming in it. Subliminally, you don't even know it's happening. So that's the state of affairs, unfortunately, on our planet right now. So what do you do about this? First thing is to realize it. First thing is to say, yeah, I know this is going on, and not to run away or deny it or make up stories against it. Fear will do that. I understand that. But that's not going to change the way it is. So that's why I do my work, JP. That's why I have developed information on deprogramming, release work, growing up the child within, oversoul work, all the things that I do and that I teach everywhere I go, and all the books that I write and my podcast. It's all about removing the mind patterns that enable the programming to take hold. I teach people how to open up the DNA that has your information in it, and undermine the artificial instructions that have been programmed into your DNA. So yes, we can take control. We are not innocent victims. We are participants, and we can decide not to participate any longer. And, you know, I go everywhere in the world, and I see many countries, many people, and it doesn't matter if you're Christian or Muslim or Hindu or Buddhist, doesn't matter. People are people. Everybody wants the same thing. They want to be happy. They want to have a nice life and a good home to live in, food to eat. Everybody wants the same thing. There shouldn't be war. There shouldn't be enemies. There shouldn't be hatred. All of that is artificial. All of that is programming and mind control. Once we realize who we are, what we are, and where we come from, and then we decide to use that and access our true self, then the world will change. Until that happens, unfortunately, we as a species with victimization mind pattern allow the oppressors and the tyrants to take control. We're giving them permission to do so. We should not rise up with war or with weapons or what you see going on in Missouri right now or in Gaza. That's not correct. That's not the correct way to fix yourself. The correct way is to start within.
to go within your own mind, to open up that 90% of the brain you're not using and the 97% of your DNA that you're not using. Open all that up. And then when you realize your power and what you can do and what you can create, then you're free. Then there's no mind control, there's no programming, none of this can have an effect. And so it's my hope that people will start working on themselves. You know, the clock is ticking. The Illuminati have an agenda and they have a timetable, and we're getting close to their complete success. So we really need to start from within and change ourselves and project that out so the world can change.
Wow. So, projecting ourself from within, as opposed to doing the things that we're instructed or programmed to do.
Yes. In fact, I like to use the analogy. You've heard it before, but I'll say it again for those who haven't heard it.
You can say it over and over again. I just love to listen to you.
Well, the analogy is thoughts are like film. The brain is the projector, and physical reality is the screen. So if you don't like the movie that's playing around you, you got to change the film, and that's the way you think. And the way you think is projected out through the brain into physical reality. Your thoughts are reflected back to you in your experiences and in the people that you attract. So if you want to change it, you have to change what you are attracting.
And indeed, your thoughts are expressed as encoding on the speech that you express. As you speak, your thoughts are encoded on that speech. Your real thoughts. Not correct. What you think you're thinking, but what you're really thinking is encoded on that. And that's why when people talk and they're not saying the true thing, the voice and the encoding doesn't match, and that's a cognitive dissonance.
Yeah, you know, the body does what the mind thinks. If you walk around saying, I can't stand this and I can't stand that, well, guess what? You're going to have a problem with your legs. And if you keep saying, I'm tired of hearing this and tired of hearing that, you're going to have a hearing problem and you're going to be tired. So you have to watch the words and correct yourself. Catch yourself saying certain words and change them.
Yeah, and if you're tired, sleep. Or do the equivalent. It's all a metaphor as well, isn't it?
Correct.
The way that everything kind of... it's all a fractal, as you know, and we're in a hologram. And yeah, so we're here, we're experimenting, and there's also been, like I said before, the Earth has been injured. So we don't know what it's like to be on a living planet. We only know what it's like to be on an unconscious planet. Or are we as unconscious as the Earth has been? Because the Earth is unconscious, then we've been unconscious for 13,000 years?
Well, to me, it's a little bit the reverse, because the Earth is a reflection of the species that's on it. So if the human race is in a coma, then the Earth is going to reflect that. If the human race projects out victimization, then the Earth will suffer. So we need to change the way we think and change our little part of the Earth and reality that we manifest. And we can do that individually and collectively, which we do subconsciously anyway. But if we become consciously aware of it and direct it and correct it, then we can create a real paradise on this planet, even with an ice age.
Yeah, because if you're in harmony, there'll be pockets of places where it won't just be ice.
Or you would learn to live in the perfect condition in the ice.
Yeah, you can build castles of ice and keep them warm. I'd love that. Enormous fires fed by the forests of pine that have been frozen in the ice, and you saw one off.
Yeah, you just break off a piece of the ice and stick it in your vodka.
That's right. And indeed, oh, you know, I do that thing. I keep vodka in the freezer.
Good for you.
Like it's proper.
That's true.
It goes into an oil. It's lovely. I love it. It flows like an oil rather than like this thin alcohol. It's interesting. So, yeah. Drinking around the world. Is that a barometer? Do you share food? I mean, obviously you're going around to different families, and how do you get to meet this Japanese family who are the descendants of Jesus? You know, is it like that you're going around like the regular touring circuit and you come across people at these events, or how's it all happen for you, Stuart? Or do you get like an intuition in a room, and you go up and talk to somebody, and you just, you know, there you go.
Well, you see, my mind pattern seems to attract all of that because, you know, for Japan, the woman who invited me over works for the major news services in Japan, and she became a client of mine. She's interested in my work. And she said to me, why don't you come over? I know some of the monks and the priests up there, and they told me about this place, and maybe you should go see it. So we did. And so I went over there. Just like in Iceland, a year ago, I met the president of Iceland at a party. You know, because I was invited to the U.S. Embassy and they were going to the party and they took me along with them. So, I mean, I just wind up in these places, you know, just like Bosnia, the very first time we were just driving through and there was a sign that said pyramid. I'm like, oh, yeah, let's go see what that is. You know, and there we were. So it's kind of serendipity. I think I am guided by my oversoul and the God mind, of course. I think, you know, that's why I'm on this world, to investigate these things and tell people about it. And of course, people can accept or reject, but I think my reason for being here is to tell people what's going on.
Absolutely. I mean, I think you're doing an essential job. Just being who you are, saying what you say, doing what you do, you're okay. It's like pulling some threads together. Okay, so we got some questions, and they're kind of all, again, up your alley, as you say. Now, where are we? Yeah, so first of all, I have to say this because this is from Wolf Baby, my girlfriend. Has he been to Tasmania, Eagle's Hawk Neck?
There is some alien connection there.
Yes.
Yes. And that feeds into the Great Australian Bight. I think that's the name of it. You know, what was it? In the 1980s, there was a young guy that was flying in that area towards Tasmania. And he reported that a huge object was flying over his plane. It was picked up on radar. And then he vanished. And no wreckage was ever found. No trace of him was ever found. But I will be reporting during my Alien Agenda conference this October that he has made contact through other alien beings who said that they took him and he decided to stay with them. He had a choice of not staying and he decided to stay. And that seems to be a common theme where people are taken and given a choice to stay with these beings or to return, and almost 100% of them say we're staying. I mean, would you come back? I wouldn't.
So really, it's a bit like a spaceport.
Yeah, now keep in mind, there are many, many different types of alien beings out there, and many of them are not so nice. So it depends who you catch a ride with.
Depending on the color of your electronic thumb, the beacon that you pull out to hitch a ride.
Yes, and I'll be talking about all of that. You know, literally, JP, there are hundreds of millions of civilizations out there. You know, we live in a galaxy of over 100 billion stars and in a universe of over 100 billion galaxies. So you do the math, it's incredible. And then times that by infinite universes. And it's just amazing how much is out there.
It is. And you also used to call your show Infinite Possibilities, didn't you? Infinite Realities, that's right.
Yes. Such a good memory for, you know, alcoholic.
I tell you, I use vodka for two reasons.
Yeah.
Number one, to clean electronic equipment.
Ah.
Number two, to flavor my banana, you freeze a banana, a drop of vodka, drop of ice cream. It's awesome. There we go.
People ask me my blood type. I say it's V positive.
It was all potato powers. I love potatoes. They're wonderful. They will keep you. You can grow potatoes in a sack, people. Grow potatoes, please. I just set up a whole bunch of grow lamps because my tomatoes are useless.
I'm
trying to get a bit of more light onto them. I got them in my conservatory, and they're not doing too well. So
let your chickens poop on them.
Yeah, well, the trouble is when the chickens sit on them, they break them, and that's what one of the problems. But yeah, I love my little chickens. It's a little society. It's like a soap opera with a small number of characters.
Okay, you need to get out more often.
I do, don't I? Actually, today I went to the most high-tech house that I know, and I was sorting out their Wi-Fi issues by twiddling aerials and messing about with the radio frequencies and things. That's where I go out to. But they got the most amazing house. They got geothermal heating, and it's got a reciprocal frame roof. It's in a circle. It's got solar passive floors made of thick stone, so when sun shines on them, they get hot just by convection. Really excellent house, and they've got like Wi-Fi in there and Ethernet as well. So, that's the only place I go out to, or my girlfriend's house. But anyway, maybe best to stay home.
I would think so, JP.
You got to bring a towel. Wherever you have to do, you have to bring a towel. And Stuart indeed knows where his towel is, Galactic Wanderer. I mean, there are other dimensions that you're obviously experiencing at the same time as, you know, physical dimension. I believe that you were trained or that you had... You're able to see certain things. Can you do it at will, or is it like all the time that you see like outside of our own visible light frame or sound frame or whatever?
Well, ever since my experience at the Montauk Project, it is always on, so to speak. I can't turn it off. That's why I don't sleep, really, because as soon as I close my eyes, I'm still seeing energy, I'm still seeing things. In fact, it's worse if I close my eyes. So that is a situation for me, which I've learned to deal with over the decades. But it's what I know. So for me, I mean, I don't know what it's like to be a quote, normal person, unquote. Whatever that means, it's not me. So I'm always on. I'm always seeing the energy, reading things. I learn to not pay attention sometimes, especially when I'm in a crowd, like in an airport, or in a group of people. I try not to pay attention. Sometimes it doesn't work, but I try not to pay attention unless I'm supposed to. But anyone can learn to do that. That's what I teach. You can learn and practice hyperspace techniques, center at the pineal gland, do your mental work centered from there. The pineal gland is your liaison between the physical and the non-physical. So the more you work centered there, the greater your abilities will be mentally and even physically.
So again, we're coming back to the micro, the macro, the in and the out, the above and below. By working on a clean inner mind, you're able to manifest a clean outer world. Is that right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's correct. That's, you know, what's in your mind is what you project out. So the more pure your thoughts are, the more benevolent, clear, that's the kind of life you will experience. if you have negative thoughts or hostile thoughts, you will experience that in your life. It's not really up to the individual. You can think anything you want, so why think the bad things?
You can think anything you want. Analysis, but anyway, so this is the essence of a creative life, because that's the solution, isn't it? Because when you're living in a programmed world, your energy is focused away from your creation. In fact, it's mostly destruction.
Well, that's because you're in an alter. You're in an alter personality. And you're not integrated into your core self. So you're dealing with added instructions that didn't originate with you.
Go on.
And so, and this is the part that people need to understand. Mind control hooks on to foundational mind patterns. So technically, you cannot be programmed with anything that isn't already within your range of thinking, so to speak. You know, if you don't have a thought about murdering, you can't be programmed to be a murderer. If you never think of stealing anything, you can't be programmed to be a thief. So you have to be a monitor of your own thoughts. And as you do your release work, and by that I mean releasing the negative thoughts, you're undermining whatever the programming is hooked onto. So it's important to do a two-prong approach, and that is changing your mind pattern and deprogramming at the same time, because then you're kind of pulling it apart, and then what's left is your core personality, and then you can reintegrate all the pieces that have been fragmented and become whole again. And that's the basis of a lot of the work that I do.
And how long does that take, Stuart? From what if you were to take somebody who's managed to survive one of these MK programs? What is the sort of recovery time, and has that period changed as you've refined your work?
Yeah, that's a good question, because it depends on the individual. I have people who have done pretty well in maybe a year, and I have people I'm working with for many years who are not making good progress because there's a part of them that sabotages all the time. And so I have a full range of, you know, that and everything in between. It's kind of like a bell curve. So the answer is it depends on the individual. And it depends on the intensity of the programming. Now, the other part of what you said, in the last, I will say, 10, 11 years, there is a satellite transmission program. I kind of call it the Borg programming, because do you remember in Star Trek, they fly around, the Borg fly around in a cube, and when the cube is attacked, the damage is constantly repaired as it's flying in space.
Yeah, very much. Very. They were, at the time, they were really scary.
Yeah. And so, you know, programming is a programming cube. That's why I call my book 13 Cube. It's about the programming. And there is a transmission that they have now that repairs the deprogramming and reinstalls as you're cleaning up. So you might be working on one end of your programming and you think you've done a whole section, and by the time you turn around, everything you've done has just been put back. So it's a constant battle. It's a constant vigilance that you must take of your own mind, being observant of what your triggers are, changes in your personality. It's helpful to have someone close to you who also watches and sees changes and informs you. And then to work on those triggers and constantly stay in your violet protection, use your brown merger symbol, balance your left and right hemisphere of the brain, work with the chakra system. All of these things are ongoing. We can't just do it and say we're done, because there's more thrown at you. It's a constant challenge on a daily basis to remain focused and integrated.
And so Wow. I mean, it is a constant challenge. Are there things that you can... do you use any things like geometric forms or, things that you place around the house to kind of nullify outside energy sources, smart meters and things like that?
Well, I do use the violet protection, as you mentioned earlier, around the house, around each person. But another key thing is the T-bar, which can look like a capital T, a small T, or an Ankh, that you see at your pineal gland. And you can notice if the arms of the T-bar are crooked or bent in any way. You mentally straighten them out so that the arms are perpendicular to one another, and that will balance the left and right hemisphere of the brain. You can also, at the pineal gland, create a royal blue circle and put a royal blue dot in the center of that circle, and centering the dot in the circle is also a balancing feature that helps to balance not only the left and right hemispheres of the brain, but also the hormonal and chemical system of the body. So these are very important, simple exercises that we need to do at least once or twice per day in order to maintain balance and grounding. Very important to use the color brown around the legs and feet, because this is the color of gravity and grounds you to the earth and will prevent you from getting detached from the body or being pushed out by sonic waves or affected by ELF, that kinds of thing. So these are this is the type of information I teach people, and of course a lot more, to help them maintain, a focus, in their life and a balance and grounding, so that they can move forward instead of being, pushed off their center by what's out there.
Wow. So, there's a big chatter in the room. They're trying to guess your star sign. Can you put everybody out of their misery?
Mm-hmm.
What's your sun sign?
Mine is Scorpio.
You're a Scorpio. Sexy, yeah. Scorpio, as I think Wolf Baby got it right.
No, that's why. Yeah. That's why I said the pretty one.
That's my girlfriend, yeah. Excellent. She's got Scorpio rising, and so
I'm a triple Scorpio.
Triple Scorpio. There you go. What's that word? You've trumped it, you know.
Yeah, you can't be more Scorpio than me.
More of a Scorpio. So wow, Stuart. What journeys? And it's, you know, so you never sleep.
No.
I
never go on vacation, because when I travel, it's work. I don't like lay on the beach or, have bonbons at the cafe. I'm working. I'm doing research. I'm teaching. I'm examining things, learning things. I'm constantly working all the time.
And so there's a constant like flow in and out, because you're learning things and then you're teaching things and you're learning things and you're teaching things. So, do you live a more or less a spontaneous life? I mean, you just deal with what's in front of you.
Yeah. And believe me, there's always something in front of me.
There's always something in the way.
There's always something. Yeah.
And you've got a husky dog, haven't you?
I have husky. I have two Norwegian elk hounds. I have hermit crabs. I have fish. I have frogs and lizards. And I have cats. You name it.
All right, a little menagerie. Because Wolf Baby has a husky who she left. She always leaves me when she goes away on holiday. She left it with me, so I have him once a year.
They have the intelligence of a 6-year-old.
Yeah, well, he's more of kind of like a he's got an abandonment thing. So I can't close the door on him. He'll just scratch at the door.
No, they're very intelligent.
Yeah, very bright, very bright. And but like he's quite wild as well, so you can't let him off the leash, or he'll never see him again. And
yeah, well, huskies are 80% wolf.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. But I do, I love the way he talks. And, you know, he's got this kind of.
Very
conversational sort of thing. So, yeah, so you've got these lovely fellows. And so presumably Janet stays home when you go away? Or do you
travel? No, sometimes she comes with me. You know, we were last December, we went to Galapagos, which, quite honestly, was a bit disappointing.
Because you always think of that lizard on the rock, don't you?
Yeah, except there isn't. And, oh, gosh, it was so hot. But it was interesting because we went into another cave. We always go to caves. And the guide was telling us that the caves go into the inner earth, and it was part of Lemuria. They even tell you that. See? And, and last November I was in Easter Island, which was also disappointing because most of those statues are knocked over. They're not even standing up, you know. And they showed me the quarry in this mountain where supposedly the stones for these statues were carved and carted down. But then when no one was around, the guide said to me, you know, we also believe that aliens used technology and floated the stones. So I said, the real story's coming out now.
Yeah, don't say that or heads will roll.
Yeah.
Anyways, I can't help it. I can't help it. It's cheesiness. It just exudes. Anyway, so I keep thinking we've got another question. Here's a question from Nancy. Why are some people seemingly not being programmed? You know, and is it because of the color of their eyes or other things?
Everyone's being programmed, whether they look like it or not. There are people who have just mass programming. You know, they just go along with the crowd. And then there are others who have more intense programming. But 100% of the Earth's population has some form of programming in them, without doubt.
Right. And this is... how much of it is addressable, Stuart? I mean, and when I'm a programmer. You know, we say, you know, there is stuff that is addressable that you can mess about, like with on your hard drive. But there's stuff in the BIOS that you can't get to. How much in the BIOS have we been messed about with? And I'm presumably that the BIOS code is DNA.
Well, but the thing is, you have to remember, ultimately, we all connect to that God mind energy. And that's the 97% that they call junk. That's the part that we need to open up. Because really, as a species, we're only operating on less than 3% of our DNA. You know, all of creation has 97% identical DNA. It doesn't matter what kind of species you are. 97% is identical. That's the God mind proof. So we need to tap into that section and open that up to find out who and what we are. And to answer your question, all of it is fixable. You can correct all of this. None of it is irreparable. It's all fixable, and you can do it.
Okay, here comes the age-old the age-old question. Why do some people seem to live a perfect life, and some people seem to suffer it all?
Well, let me tell you something about those perfect life people. You don't know what's going on behind the scenes, because I have clients all over the world. I have clients who are fabulously wealthy and dirt poor. And you know something? They all have the same problem. It's just that some people could put on a show, they can put on a cover, so everything looks nice, but behind the scenes, not so nice. So everyone has issues. I don't care who you are.
Everyone indeed has stuff.
You know what you say? If it's not one thing, it's your mother.
Usually so.
Yeah.
Stuart Swerdlow, it's been a wonderful 2 hours. As I said, I always love talking with you. I really enjoyed producing for you the years back, and so it's been great to have you on Wolf Spirit. It's been a lovely. The chat room's been really happy. Stick around, everybody. Wolf Spirit Radio. We're going to have Phil Restino and Larry Pinkney. We shall not be silent. Big show coming up. So it's been a great evening, and thank you so much for joining me, Stuart. And give people your how to find you and all that stuff.
Yes, thank you, JP. It's a pleasure. Go to expansions.com. Look up my visits to Iceland and Poland coming up next month. I'll be in October at the conference here in Michigan. You must attend. The Alien Agenda, you need to know about it. Sign up for the newsletter. Go on my Facebook fan page. Any help that you need, contact Patricia at customersupport@expansions.com. Watch my podcast. Look at the Q&A, read the comments. You will find everything that you need to know.
I missed out one. Is there an update on the Kuiper Belt anywhere?
Oh, that's what I'll be talking about in October.
Yeah, come to the October, do. Are you going to have it on YouTube in the end?
I don't know.
All need to know about it, Stuart. We all need to know.
I know, but I can't give it away before the show.
Oh, no. You know, the film of it or the recording of it or the podcast, you know, are you going to record the presentation?
I'm sure it will be recorded. And also, just to let you know, hopefully next month the Montauk Chronicles movie will be out.
Montauk Chronicles, looking forward to it. Let's talk some more. Maybe also once the movie's out, we can talk about that, because that I'm really looking forward to. Stuart Swerdlow, www.expansions.com. Go and check him out. Awesome dude. Thank you so much. Stay tuned, Wolf Spirit Radio. Good night. Good night, Revolution Radio. It's been wonderful.